Do you feel a shiver up your spine from fear? Yes, it's another story from the Nightshade Diary. You know what that means. Check under the bed and make sure no one or nothing is there. Is the closet door securely shut? Then leave your disbelief behind. Amp up your imagination and hang on tight for another ride into terror and mystery. And like all good horror stories, just imagine it's a dark and stormy night. And remember, screaming like a little girl is permitted.
Sale by Lester Dent. The fish shook its tail as the knife cut off its head. Red ran out of the two parts, and the fluid spread enough to cover the wet red marks where two human hands had failed to hold on the dock edge. Oscar Sale, with the palm of his own left hand in the puddle. The small policeman kept coming out on the dock, tramping in the rear edge of glare from his flashlight. Sale split the fish belly, shook it over the edge of the yacht dock, and there were some splashes below in the water. The stuff from the fish made the red stain in the water a little larger. When the small policeman reached Sale, he stopped and gave his cap a cock. He looked down at Sale's feet and up at Sale's head. The cop said, "Damn, if you ain't a long drink of water." Sale said nothing. The cop asked, "Did you give that yell a minute ago?" Sale showed plenty of teeth so that his grin would be seen in the moonlight. He picked up the fish hook and held it close to his red, wetted left palm. "Little accident," he said. When the cop put light on the hand, Sale tightened the thumb down and made a wrinkle in the palm. Red was squeezed out of the wrinkle, and two or three drops fell on the dock. It was enough like seepage from a cut on the fish hook might have torn that Sale went on breathing. "Hook, huh?" the cop said vaguely. He put the toe of his right shoe into the fish's head, open mouthful of snake fang teeth. "Barracuda," he added, not sounding as if that was on his mind. "They don't eat 'em in Miami, not when you catch the damn things in the harbor, anyhow." Sale's laugh did not go off so well, and he turned it into a throat clearing. He said, "People get hot ideas." The policeman did not say anything and began spearing around with his flashlight beam. He poked it over the edge of the dock at one of the fish organs floating on the stained water. He held it there for what seemed a year. After he finally began pointing the beam at other places, the light located the bug eye. The bug eye was tied at the end of the dock with spring lines. Sloping masts were shiny and black, and black canvas covers were on the sails. The hull looked black, neat, new. The cop dabbed his light up and down each of the two bug eye masts and asked, "Yours?" Sale said, "Yep." "What you call that kind of a boat?" Sale began talking heartily about the boat. He said, "Chesapeake Bay five-log bug eye. She's 34 feet long at the waterline and 45 overall. Her bottom is made out of five logs drifted together with Swedish iron rods. She has 12-foot beam and only draws a little over 2 feet of water with the centerboard up. A bug eye has sloping masts. You tell them by that. And the clipper bow they always put on them. They're made." "Yeah," the cop said. "Uh-huh." He splashed light on Sale. Sale would have been all right if he had been a foot or two shorter. His face would never wear a serious look successfully. Too much mouth. Sun and salt water was on its way to ruining his hair. Some of the black had been scrubbed out of his black polo shirt and black dungarees. Bare feet had long toes. Weather had gotten to all of the man a lot. The policeman switched off his line. "That was a hell of a funny yell," he said. "And damn, if you aren't the tallest thing I ever saw." He stamped his feet as he walked away. Sale shut and opened his eyes slowly, and by the time he got rid of the effects of the flashlight, the officer was out of sight on shore. Sale held both hands out about a foot from his eyes. There was enough moonlight for him to see them. A slight breeze made coolness against one side of his face. Loud music came from the Take a Sail in the Moonlight for a Dollar a Couple boat at the far end of the city yacht basin, but a barker spoiled the effect of the music. Two slot machines chugged alongside the lunch stand at Pier 6. After he had watched his hands tremble for a while, Sale picked up hook, line, fish knife, and got aboard the bug eye. Sale. Name of the bug eye was in white letters on the black life preservers tied to the mainstays. Sale grasped a line, took half hitches off a cleat, and pulled a live box made of laths partly out of the water. Some crawfish, crabs, and two more live barracudas were in the live box. He cut the line close to the live box and let the weighted box sink. The tiny cabin of the bug eye had headroom below for a man of ordinary height. Sale had to stoop. The usual gear was neatly in place, cleverly stowed in the cabin. Sale popped the fish into a kettle in the galley, hurrying. With a point of the fish hook, he gouged a small place in his left palm, making faces over the job. He straightened out the stuff on the tackle locker enough to get rid of signs that a hook and line had been grabbed out in haste. After he had washed and held the mouth of a mercurochrome bottle against the gouge, he looked out of the hatch. The young policeman was back where the fish had bled and was using his flashlight. He squatted and picked up the fish head. He squeezed it and got fresh blood out of it. After a while, he stood up and approached the dock end. When his flashlight brightened the bug eye's dark sloping mass and black sail covers, Sale was at the galley, making enough noise cutting up the fish to let the cop know where he was and what he was doing. Sale let 4 or 5 minutes pass before he put his head out of the hatch and looked. Perspiration had made the back of his polo shirt moist by then. The cop had gone somewhere else. Sale was still looking and listening for the policeman when he heard a man yell and a woman curse. The woman said, "Damn stinker!" and more that was worse. The man's yell was just a yell. The sounds came out of Bayfront Park, which lay between the Yacht Basin and Biscayne Boulevard. Sale got out on deck and stretched his neck around. He saw a man run among the palms in the park. The man was alone. Then the small policeman and his flashlight appeared among the palms. During the next 5 minutes, the policeman and his flashlight were not motionless long enough for him to have found anything. Sale dropped into the bug-eye cabin and stripped naked, working fast. His body looked better without clothes. The hair on it was golden and long, but not thick. He put on black jersey swim trunks. Standing in the companion and looking around, his right hand absently scratched his chest. No one was in sight. He got over the side without being conspicuous. The water had odor and its normal quota of floating things. The tide was high, slack, almost, but still coming in a little. Sail swam under the dock. The dock had been built strongly because of the hurricanes. There was a net of cross timbers underneath, and anything falling off the south side of the dock would be carried against them by the tide. Sale counted pilings until he knew he was under the place on the dock where he had used to fish. He began diving and groping around underwater. He was quiet about that. He found what he was seeking on the sixth or seventh dive. He kept in the dark places as he swam away with it. One of the little islands in the harbor seemed to be the only place that offered privacy. He made for it. The island, an artificial half-acre put there when they dredged the city Yacht Basin, was a heap of dark silence when Sale swam tiredly to it. Pine trees on the island had been bent by the hurricanes, some uprooted. The weeds did not seem to have been affected. Sale tried not to splash, coming out of the shallows onto the sand beach. He towed the Greek underwater as long as possible. Two stubborn crabs and some seaweed hung to the Greek when Sale carried him into the pines and weeds. The knife sticking in the Greek and what it had done did not help. Weeds mashed under the body when Sale laid it down. Pulpy skin in the Greek's billfold were probably greenbacks and stiffer, smaller rectangles, business cards. Silver coins, a pocket knife, two clips for an automatic. The gun was in a clip holster under the left armpit of the corpse. Inside the Greek's coat lining was a panel 4 inches wide, 5 times as long, 1/4 inch thick, hard, and rigid. The Greek's wristwatch ticked. Sale put the business cards and the panel from the coat lining inside his swim trunks and was down on his knees, cleaning his hands with sand when the situation got the best of his stomach. By the time he finished with that, he had sweated profusely and had a headache over the eyes. He left the Greek on the island. The water felt cold as he swam back towards the bug eye, keeping in with dark places he could find. The water chill helped the headache. Having reached the bug eye with the stuff still in his swim trunks, he clung to the bobstay. The chain brace, which ran from the bow waterline to the end of the long bowsprit. He blew the brackish bay water off his lips quietly and listened. There was no sign anywhere that he had been seen or heard. He made himself sink and began feeling over the parts of the dock which would still be underwater at low tide. Everything underwater was inches thick with barnacle and oysters. He found a niche that would do, took the stuff out of his trunks, and wedged it there tightly enough so there was not much danger of it working out. Sail clung to the bug-eyes bobstay until all the water ran off him that he wanted to run. He then scrambled aboard and ducked into the cabin. He had started to shed the bathing suit when the woman said, "Please." Sail came up straight and his head thumped the ceiling hard. She swung her legs off the forward bunk. Even then, light from the kerosene gimbal lamp did not reach more than her legs. The feet were small in dark blue sandals, which showed red enameled toenails. Her legs had not been shaved recently and were nice. Sail chewed an imaginary something between two eye teeth while he squinted at the girl. He felt of his head where it had hit the ceiling. Two or three times he seemed about to say something, but didn't, and went forward into one of the pair of small single staterooms. The shadow-embedded rest of her did not look bad as he passed. He shut the stateroom door and got out of the swim trunks. He tied a 3-pound fish sinker to the trunks and dropped them through a porthole into the bay, which was dredged 3 fathoms deep there. He put on his scrubbed dark polos and dungarees. The girl had moved into the light when he opened the door and entered the cabin. The rest of her was interesting. 20-something, he judged. She smiled and said, "You don't act as if you remember me, Wesley." Sail batted his eyes at her. "Gosh," he said, "but you're tall." Sail scratched behind his right ear, changed his eyebrows around at her, gave the top of his head 3 hard rubs, then leaned back against the galley. This upset a round bottle. He caught it, looked at it, and seemed to get an idea. He asked, "Drink?" She had crossed her legs. Her skirt was split. "That would be nice," she smiled. Sail, his back to her, made more noise than necessary in rattling bottles and glasses and pinking an opener into a can of condensed milk. He mixed 2 parts of gin, 1 of cream of cocoa, and 1 of condensed milk. He put 4 drops from a small green bottle in 1 drink and gave that one to the girl, holding it out a full arm length as if bashful. They sipped. "It's not bad without ice, Wesley," she murmured. Sail said, "Thanks, lady," politely. Her blue handbag started to slip out of the hollow of her crossed legs. She caught it quickly. "For a husband, you're a darn polite cuss," she said. Sail swallowed with a distinctly pigeon noise. "Huh? My God, don't you remember? What? If this isn't something. 2 weeks ago, Tuesday, 4 o'clock in the morning, we were pretty tight, but we found it just a third of the piece in Coconut Grove. You had to hock the engagement ring with the Jeep for his fee and $20. We all went out and had some drinks, and I kind of lost track of things, including you." "I'll be," Sail said vaguely. The girl put her head back and laughed. The mirth did not sound just right. "I didn't know what to do," she said. "I remembered you said you were a jewelry drummer out of Cincinnati. I sat around the hotel. Then I began to get a mad up." An unnaturalness was growing in her voice. She pinched her eyes shut and shook her head. Her blue purse slid to the floor. "I'm here to tell you. I had a time locating you," she said. "I might have known you would be a sailor. God, imagine. Anyway, Mama's right on deck now, mister, and I want something done about it. If you think you're not the man, you're going to have to prove it in a big way. You want me to prove my name, business, and recent whereabouts? Is that it?" "You bet," Sail said. "That's what I figured." She peered at him, winking both eyes. Then fright grabbed her face. "You ain't so damn smart," she said through her teeth. She started to get up, but something was wrong with her. Knee joints by now, and she slid off the bench and sat hard on the black battleship linoleum. Sail moved fast and got his long fingers on the blue purse as she clawed it open. A small bright revolver fell out of the purse as it had a tug-of-war over it. "Blick," the girl gasped. Blick and a revolver came out of the oilskin locker. The gun was a small, bright twin to the girl's. Blick's Panama fell off slick mahogany hair and disarranged oilskins fell down in the locker behind him. Blick had his lips rolled in until he seemed to have no lips. He looked about old enough to have fought in the last war. "Want it shut off?" he gritted. Sale jerked his hand away from the girl's purse, as if a bullet were already heading for it. He put his hands up high, as the cabin, carlings, and ceiling would allow. The upper part of his stomach jumped slightly with each beat of his heart, moving the polo shirt fabric. The girl started to get up. "Couldn't," she said. "Blick," weakly. Blick, watching Sale, threw at her. "You had to be a sucker and try that Mary when you were tight gag to find out who he is?" The girl's lips worked with some words before they got out as sounds. "Was I know he doped drink?" Blick gritted at Sale. "Bud, she's my sis. And if she don't come out of that, I wouldn't want to be you." Sale watched the bright sun. Sweat had come in on his forehead enough to start running. "She'll be all right," he said. "What you give her?" "Truth serum." "You louse. Fat lot of good it'll do you." Sale said nothing. Blick ran his eyes up and down. Sale then said, "They sure left the faucet on too long when they poured you, didn't they, bud?" Sale got his grin to operate. He said, "Let's see if some words will clear this any." Blick said, "That's an idea, bud. I think I got you figured. You're some guy Andopoulos rung in. It was like Andopoulos to get himself some help." "Andopoulos was the one who got knifed?" Sales asked. "You ain't that dumb." "Was he?" "Nah. That was Sam, my pal." Sale rubbed on the top of his head. "I'm sort of confused." "You and us both," Blick said. "We're confused by you. We ain't seen you around before today. But me and Nola and Sam are watching Andopoulos. And he starts out on the dock. You're the only boat out here. So it's a cinch he wanted to see you." "He only made it about halfway out of the dock," Sale said dryly. "Sure. Sam headed him off. Sam wanted to talk to Andopoulos was all." "It wasn't all," Sale drawled. "What Sam really wanted was to make Andopoulos tell him something. Andopoulos had some information. Sam wanted it. Sam told Andopoulos that if he didn't cough up on the spot, he would get his entrails shot out, or words to such effect. Sam reached for his gun, but he had made the mistake of not unbuttoning his coat before he started the argument. Andopoulos knew exactly where to put a knife. Sam went off the dock after he gave just one yell. And that brought the cop." Sale squinted one eye. Perspiration was stinging. He echoed, "And that brought the cop." Blick was holding the gun steady. He said, "Andopoulos ran before the cop got here. Hid in the park, and Nola and I tried to get him later. But he broke away and ran."
"Then you came here?"
Blick grinned thinly. "Let's get back to the time between the knifing of Sam and the arrival of the cop. You, bud, done some fast work. You were sweet, what I mean. You got a hook and line, grabbed a live fish out of your live box, jumped on the dock and butchered the fish to hide the marks where Sam got it. You even got the insides of the fish into the water to hide any bloodstains where Sam sank. Then you fed the cop a line when he got there."
"You sure had your eyes open," Sale said.
"Did the cop go for your story?"
"I'm still wondering," Sale said thoughtfully.
Blick watched Sale. "How much do you know?"
Sale got rid of his maid grin.
"I'll bite. How much?"
"So, you're going to start that?" Blick said.
Nola was breathing noisily. Blick pointed at her and said, "Help me get her going."
Sale grasped the girl and lifted her.
"Stay that way," Blick ordered, then searched Sale, found no weapons, and said, "Out." Sale walked the girl up the companionway and onto the dock, then started to let go when the girl and get back aboard.
"Along with us," Blick ordered. "It'll be swell if Andopoulos has told you what we're trying to find out, wouldn't it?"
Sale said nothing. His breathing was as audible as the girl. Blick got on the other side of the girl and helped her hold up.
"We're tight," Blick said. "Stagger."
They staggered along the dock to the sidewalk and along that. Yacht sailors stood in a knot at the end of the Pier 6 lunch stand, and out of the knot came the chug of the slot machines. Blick put his hand
and small revolver into a coat pocket. They turned to the right, away from the lunch stand. Sale said, "You might have the wrong idea about me."
"We'll get into that, Bud," Blick said. "We'll go into that in a nice place I know about."
They scuffed over the sidewalk, and Blick, walking as if he did not feel he weighed more than a ton, seemed to think of a possibility, which pleased him.
"Hell, Nola, this guy covered up that knifing for Andopoulos, so he's got to be with Andopoulos, all the way."
Nola did not answer. She was almost sound asleep. Blick pinched her, slapped her, and that awakened her somewhat. A police radio car was parked at the corner of Biscayne Boulevard and the street they were traveling. Blick did not see it in time. When he did discover it, he took his breath in with a sharp noise.
"We're drunk," Blick warned. "Taking each other home."
Sale shoved a little to steer the girl to the side of the walk, furthest from the prowl car. Blick shoved back to straighten them up. He also got mad. Blick's gun was in his coat pocket, and if shooting started, it was no time for a gun to be in a pocket. Blick started to take it out, probably intending to hold it at his side, where it could not be seen from the police car. Sale watched the gun start out of the pocket. It had a high front sight, and there was an even chance of it hanging on the pocket lining. It did. Sale shoved Blick and Nola as hard as he could. Force of the effort bounced them towards the police car. He grabbed the spare tire at the back of the machine and used it to help himself around. A policeman in the car yelled, "What the hell's this?" He wasn't excited. Blick did not shoot. He got Nola over his shoulder and ran. A taxicab was on its stand at the corner. Blick made it. Sale shouted, "Kidnappers!" One of the cops leaned out, looked at him and said, "Huh?" Blick leaped into the taxi with his sister. An instant later, the taxi driver fell out of his own machine, holding his head. The taxi took off. "They stole my heap," the taxi driver shrieked. The police car starter began whining. It whined and whined, and nothing happened. One cop wailed, "It never done this before."
"Try turning on the switch," Sale yelled.
The motor started. An officer stuck his head out of the car, said, "You stick around here, wise guy," and the machine left in pursuit of the cab. Sale, who had the legs for it, ran away from there very fast. Sale, when he reached the Pier 6 lunch stand, planted his hips against the counter and caught up with his breathing. A young man, who looked as youths in lunch stands somehow always look, came over, swiped at the counter with his towel, got a look at Sale, blinked, and wanted to know, "How's the weather up there?"
"Dry," Sale said.
"What you got in cans?" Sale drank the first and second cans of beer in gulps, but did some pondering over the third. When it was down, he absentmindedly put 3 dimes on the counter.
45, the youth corrected. "Cans, 15.
Sale substituted a half dollar and put the nickel change in one of the slot machines, still involved with his thoughts. The one-armed bandit gave him a lemon and 2 bars, another bar just showing.
"Almost a jackpot," someone said.
"History," Sale said, repeating itself. A telephone booth was housed at the end of Pier 6. Sale dialed the O and asked for police headquarters. The slot machines chugged at the lunch stand while he waited. A card in the phone box told how to report a fire, get the police, or call an ambulance. He read part of it, and headquarters answered. Sale said, "I want to report an attempted robbery. This is Captain Oscar Sale of the yacht Sale. A few minutes ago, a man and a woman boarded my boat and marched me away at the point of a gun. I do not know why. I feel they intended to kill me. There was a police car parked at the corner of Biscayne, and I broke away. The man and woman fled in a taxi. The officers chased them. I do not know whether the officers have reported yet."
"They have."
"Did they catch the pair?"
"No."
Sale almost said that was what he had called to find out, but caught himself in time.
"It might help if you described the pair," the police voice said.
Sale described an imaginary couple that were not like Blick and Nola in any particular except that they were man and woman.
"Thanks," said the voice at headquarters. "When you get aboard your boat, tell Patrolman Joey Cripp to give us a ring. I'm Captain Raider. You'll probably find Patrolman Cripp on your boat."
Sale was wearing a startled look as he hung up and felt for a nickel in the coin return cup of the telephone. 3 men were waiting in the cabin of Sale when Sale got there. 2 wore police uniforms, the other had civilian clothes. 1 policeman was using his tongue to lather a new cigar with saliva. The tongue was coated. His neck had some loose red skin on it. He was shaking, not very much, but shaking. The second officer was the small patrolman. He still had his flashlight. The man in civilian clothes was putting bottles and test tubes in a scuffed leather bag, which held more of the same stuff, and a microscope, off which much of the enamel had been worn. His suit was fuzzy gray, rimless spectacles were pinched tight on his nose, and he had chewed half of the cigar in his mouth without lighting it. The cigar was the same kind the policeman with his shakes was licking. Sale said, "Captain Raider wants Patrolman Joey Cripp to call him." "That's me," the young patrolman said, and started for the companionway. "Wait a minute," Sale said. "You didn't happen to get a look at a man and a woman who left here with me a while ago?" "I sure did. I was behind the bush in the park," the young officer went on. The shaking policeman got up slowly, holding his damp cigar and looking miserable. He took a full breath and started words coming. "Gracious, but you're a tall man," he said. "I'm Captain Cripp, and Joey is my son. This is Mr. Waterman. You have a wonderful boat here. Someday I'm going to get me a boat like this and go to the South Seas. I want to thank you for reporting your trouble to Captain Raider, which I presume you have just done. And I want to congratulate you on your narrow escape from those two. But next time, don't take such chances. Never fool with a man with a gun. We'll let you know as soon as we hear anything of your attacker and his companion. They got away from the radio car. I hope you have a good time in Miami and no more trouble. We have a wonderful city, a wonderful climate." He shook with his chill. Captain Cripp pulled out another cigar and a shiny cylindrical metal lighter. He took another breath. "Smoke? Of course you do. Better light it yourself. I shake like a leaf. I've got the damn malaria, and every other day I shake. That's an excellent cigar, if I do say so myself. One of our native products, made right here in Miami, and as mild as an old maid's kiss. There, didn't I tell you it was a good cigar?" He took back his lighter. He did not touch the bright metal, or Sale had held it and made fingerprints. "Isn't admission charged to this?" Oh, yes. You are naturally puzzled by our presence here. Forget it. It means nothing at all. It's just an idea. Captain Raider got after talking to Joey about a yell and a fish." Patrolman Joey Cripp jumped aboard and came below. "Captain Raider offers his apologies for sending us aboard your boat in your absence," Joey said. "And he wonders if you have anything you would like to say to us." Sale, his scowl getting blacker and blacker, gritted. "I'm making an effort not to say it." Joey said, "Well, Mr. Sale, if you will excuse me, we will be going." The rabbity man, Waterman, finished putting things in his bag and picked up a camera and a photo flash attachment, pointed the camera at Sale. The outfit clicked and flashed. "Thank you," he said, not very politely. They left. Sale threw the cigar overboard, then examined the cabin. Almost everything had been put back in place carefully, but in one spot he found fingerprint powder, enough to show they had printed the place. Sale tried to sleep the rest of the night. He did get a little. The rest of the time he spent at the companion with a mirror, which he had rigged on the tip joint of a fishing rod so as to look around without showing himself. Boats at a slip do not usually have an anchor watch, but on a big Matthews at the opposite slip, somebody seemed to be standing at anchor. The watcher did not smoke, did not otherwise allow any light to get to his features. He might have been tall or short, wide or narrow. The small things he did were what any man would do during a long, tiresome job. There was one exception. The watcher frequently put a finger deep in his mouth and felt around. Sale took a shower with the dock hose. It gave him a chance to get a better look at the Matthews. The watcher of the night was not in evidence. The sail's dinghy rode in stern davits, bug-eye fashion, at enough of a tilt not to hold spray. Sale lowered it. He got a brush and the dock hose and washed down the back topsides, taking off dried salt, which seawater had deposited. He dropped his brush in the water at different times. In each case, it sank, and he had to reach under for it. The fourth time he reached under for the brush, he retrieved the stuff which he had taken off the Greek. The articles had not worked out of the niche between the dock cross braces under the water where he had jammed them. Sale finished washing down, hauled the dinghy up on the davits, and during the business of coiling the dock hose around its faucet, looked around. Any of a dozen persons in sight might have been the watcher off the Matthews. The others would be tourists down for a gawk at the yachts. He spirited the grease stuff below with a scrub brush. One of the cards said, Captain Santorin Gura Andopoulos of the yacht Athens Girl, chartered for Gulfstream fishing. Nobody catching more fish. The address was Pier 5. The other 26 card said, Captain Sam Dokomos, owned the Lignum Vitae Towing Company, an address and a telephone number for day calls only. There was also a piece of board, 4 by 20 inches, 1/4 of an inch thick mahogany, with screw holes in 4 corners. The varnish was peeled rather than worn, as was some of the gold leaf. The gold leaf formed a letter, 4 figures, K9420. Sail burnt everything in the galley, shipmate. There was no one in the telephone booth at the end of the pier. He looked up the number of Pier 5, which was no more than 200 feet distant, and dialed it. Captain Andopoulos, he requested. Through the window he could see them go looking for Captain Andopoulos. It took them almost 5 minutes to decide. They couldn't find him. Maybe he went to the dentist, somebody thought, the one who had hunted suggested. Yeah? Yeah. He's been having a toothache, somebody said. Sayo went back to the bug-out and put on a dark suit, tropical weight, a black polo shirt and black shoes, his shore cruising rig. The cafeteria was overdone in chromium. The waiters who carried the trays were dressed in the same red that was on the walls. There was a score of customers and a boy who wandered among the tables selling newspapers and racing dope sheets. He sold more dope sheets than papers. One man, eating near the door, did not put syrup on his pancakes or sugar in his coffee. When he finished, he put a finger in the back of his mouth to feel. Sale finished his beer and donuts and strolled around the corner to a U-drive it. The only car in which they did not want to deposit was a little 6-cylinder sedan, not new. Sale drove it around, sticking his head out frequently to look for a tall building. He found it and parked in front of it. He made a false start into the building, then came back to take another look at an upright dingus. Then he went inside. He told the elevator operator loudly, 5, before they started up. The 5th floor corridor was empty. When the man, who had felt of his tooth in the cafeteria, came sneaking up the stairs, Sale was set. He had his belt strapped tight around his fist. The man got down on all fours to mew his pain. Sale hit again, then unwrapped the belt, blew on his fist, worked the fingers. He had the senseless man in his arms when the elevator answered his signal. Quick! I gotta rush my friend to a place for a treatment, he explained. He drove 5 or 6 miles on a side road off the Tamiami Trail before he found a lonesome spot and got out. He hauled the man out. The man began big at the top and tapered. His small hands were calloused. Dirt was ground into the calluses. The nails broken. His face was darker than his hair. A leather envelope purse held 300 in old and new bills. There was $1.61 in change and the cashier's slip for his cafeteria breakfast in his trousers. A knife was in a holster against the small of his back. It was flat and supported by a high belt. Sale threw it in the canal at the roadside. It was not the one with which he had knifed Sam. He had left that one in his victim. Handfuls of water from the canal did not speed his revival much. When he finally came around, he groaned, squirmed, and started feeling of his bad tooth. Sale stood back and showed him a fat blue revolver. Just try to be nonchalant, Andopoulos, he advised. Andopoulos immediately stood up. Sit down, Sale directed sharply. Andopoulos walked towards him. Sale shoved the gun out, gritting desperately. This thing is loaded, you fool. Andopoulos leaped. Sale dodged, but hardly enough. Andopoulos hit him with a shoulder. The impact spun him. Since he didn't want to shoot, the gun was a handicap. It tied up his fist. Andopoulos hit him on the belt buckle. Numbness grabbed the whole front of his body. Something suddenly against his back was the ground. Yeah, Andopoulos screeched. Yeah! He jumped feet together at Sale's middle. Sale was too numb to move clear. The feet hit his chest. Everything seemed to break, and red-hot pain knocked the numbness out. Sale got Andopoulos' legs, jerked. Andopoulos windmilled his arms, but fell. Sail clamped onto one of the man's feet and began doing things to it and the leg. Andopoulos, turning over and over, raised a dust cloud. He moaned and bellowed and made dog noises. When he judged Andopoulos was dizzy enough, Sail pounced on the dust cloud. He hit variously an arm, the ground, a hip, and other places which he could not identify. Andopoulos, bewildered and with dirt in his eyes, failed to get his jaw out of the way. Sail straightened, put back his head, and started to take a full breath. He began coughing, hacking, gagging, holding his chest. He sat down on the road. He began to sweat profusely. After a while, he unbuttoned his pants and pulled up his shirt. There was one purple print of the entire bottom of both of Andopoulos' feet, and the chest was skinned. The loose skin mixed with the long golden hair. There was not much blood. Andopoulos got his eyes open and snarled, "Yeah, I stomp you good if you don't lay off me." Sail coughed and got up. He kept his feet far apart, but did not teeter much. He said thickly, "My Macedonian friend, you stood anchor watch on me all night, and you were still trailing me this morning. Where do you get that layoff stuff?" "Before that, I'm talk about," Andopoulos growled. "What?" Andopoulos took a breath and blew words out. "For 2 weeks now, you've been follow me like dog. I go to Bimini in 2 days, and you and that black bug eye in Bimini before long. I make the rump from Bimini here yesterday. You make him too. What you take me for, one blind owl, huh?" Sail asked, "Do you think you're bulletproof too?" Andopoulos snorted, "Me? I don't think you shoot. What gave you that idea?" "Go jump in hell," Andopoulos said. Sail coughed, some deep and low, trying to keep it from moving in his ribs. He said, "All right. Now that we're being honest with each other, I'll tell you a true story about a yacht named Lady Luck. That's just so there won't be any misunderstanding about who knows what." Andopoulos crowded his lips into a bunch and pushed the bunch out as far as he could, but didn't say anything. Sail began. "The Lady Luck, Department of Commerce registration number K9420, was as neat a little yacht as ever catched off Featherbed Bank. She belonged to Bill, Lord of Tulsa. Out in Tulsa, they call him Bill the Osage Ogre, on account of he's got what it seems to take to find oil. Mrs. Bill likes jewelry, and Bill likes her, so he buys her plenty, because Mrs. Bill really likes her rocks. She carries them around with her. You following me?" Andopoulos was. He still had his lips pursed. "Bill Lord had his Lady Luck anchored off the vet camp on Lower Matacumbe last November," Sale continued. "Bill and the missus went ashore, looking over the camp. Bill was in the trenches himself back when and is some kind of a shot in the American Legion or the Democrats, so he was interested in the camp. The missus left her pretties on the yacht. Remember that. Everybody has read about the hurricane that hit that afternoon, and maybe some noticed that Bill and his missus were among those who hung on behind that tank car. But the Lady Luck wasn't so lucky, and she dragged her picks off somewhere and sank. For a while, nobody knew where." Sail stopped to cough. He had to lay down on his back before he could stop, and he was very careful about getting erect again. Perspiration had wet most of him. He said, "A couple of weeks ago, a guy asked the Department of Commerce lads to check and give him the name of the boat and the name of the owner that carried the number K9420. That was a mistake." "Pooey," Andopoulos said, "on your story." "The word got to me," Sale continued. "Never mind how. It was easy to find. You were the lad asking for the dope on K9420. Inquiry brought out that you had a fishing party down around Matacumbe and Long Key a few days before you suddenly got curious about K9420. It was a little harder to locate the parties who had your boat hired at the time. Two Pan American pilots. They said you anchored off Lower Matacumbe to bottom fish, and your anchor fouled something, and you had a time. And finally, when you got the anchor up, you brought aboard some bow planking off a sunken boat. From the strain as it was torn loose, it was apparent the anchor had pulled the planking off the rest of the boat, which was still down there. You checked up as a matter of course to learn what boat you had found.
Andopoulos looked as if something besides his tooth hurt him.
Tough you didn't get in touch with the insurance people instead of contacting Captain Sam Dokomas, a countryman of yours who had a towing and salvage outfit and a bad reputation.
Andopoulos growled.
Damn. You said something then.
Sale kept his voice lower to decrease the motion of his ribs and expelling hair for words.
You needed help to get the Lady Luck, but Captain Sam Dokomas tried to make you cough up the exact location. Then you smelled a double cross, got scared, and lit for Bimini. I've been hanging around all this time and not doing a good job of it, so you got wise to me. That scared you back to Miami. You had decided on a showdown and were headed for my boat when Captain Sam collared you on the dock. You took care of part of your troubles with a knife right there, but that left Captain Sam's girlfriend and her brother, Nola and Blick, or whatever their names are. They were in the know. They tried to grab you in the park after you fixed Sam up, but you outran them.
Now, that's a very complete story, don't you think?
Oh, yes. You got reckless and jumped me a minute ago because you figured I wouldn't shoot you because nobody but you knows the exact location of the Lady Luck. The two Pan American boys fishing down there with you when you found the ship forgot to make bearings and didn't have a smell of an idea where they were at the time.
Andopoulos was a man who did his thinking with the help of his face, and there was more disgust than anything else on his features.
You trying to cut in? He snarled finally.
Not trying. Have.
Andopoulos thought that over. The sun was comfortable, but mosquitoes were coming out of the swamp around the road to investigate, hungrier than land sharks.
Yeah, Andopoulos muttered finally. I guess you have at that.
Let's get this straight, Andy, you and I, and nobody else.
Andopoulos nodded.
Okay. Now, just who is this Blick?
Nola's brother.
Now, hell, Andy. And Nola was married to that double-crosser Sam.
Sale made a whistling mouth.
So, it was Nola's husband you dirked. She'll like you for that.
So what?
She didn't go much for him much.
No?
Nah. That dame.
Skip it, Sale said suddenly. He put his shirt on, favoring his chest.
Dang, fellow, you sure busted up my ribs. We've got to watch the insurance company. They paid off on Mrs. Bill's stuff. Over $100,000. They'll have wires out.
Andopoulos nodded.
What about stuff for diving?
There's sponger equipment aboard my bug eye, Sale said. I tried that racket over in Tarpon Springs, but you can't compete with those Greeks over there.
Let's go, Andopoulos said. He was feeling of his tooth when he got in the car.
Sale drove slowly. The road, nothing more than a high dike, built up with material scooped out to make the drainage canal, was rough. It hurt his ribs.
Sale had driven no more than half a mile when both front tires let go their air. Maybe the car would still have remained on the road, but bullets also knocked holes in the windshield. The car was in the canal before anything else could be done about it. The car broke, most of its windows going down the canal bank. The canal must have been 6 feet deep. Its tea-colored water filled the machine at once. Sale's middle hurt, and he had lost his air and had to breathe in, and there was nothing but water. After the water had filled the car, it seemed to rush around inside. Sale tried the doors, but they wouldn't open. He did not touch Andopoulos in his struggles. Andopoulos did not seem to be in the car. Sale couldn't remember him having been thrown out. The first window Sale found was too small. He pummeled the car roof, but hardly had strength enough to knock himself away from what he was hitting. Then he was suddenly out of the car. He didn't know just how he had managed it. He reached the top but sank twice before he clutched a weed on shore, after which an attack of the spasms kept him at first from hearing the shots. Yells were mixed in the shot noise. Sale squeezed water off his eyeballs with the lids, looked and saw Andopoulos on the canal bank. Andopoulos was some distance away and running madly. Blick and his sister Nola were running after Andopoulos. They were shooting at Andopoulos' legs, it seemed. They all three ran out of sight, but the sounds told Sale they had winged Andopoulos and grabbed him. Sale had wrenched some of the water out of his lungs by now. He swam to a bush which hung down into the water and got under it. he managed to get his coughing stopped. And Doppler was sobbing at the top of his voice when Blick and Nola dragged him up. "Shoot his other leg off if he acts up," Nola, Blick said. "I'll get our tall bud." Sale began to want to cough. He desired to cough until it was almost worth getting shot for. "He must be a submarine," Blick said. He got a stick and poked around. "Hell, Nola, this water is 8 feet deep here anyhow." And Doppler bubbled something in Greek. "Shut up," Blick said. "We'll put bullets into you like we put them into that tires of your car." And Doppler went on bubbling. "His leg is bleeding bad, Blick," Nola said. "Hell, I care. He knifed your husband, didn't he?" Air kept coming up in big bubbles from the submerged car. Sale tried to keep his mind off the cough. Blick stood for sentry on the bank with his bright little pistol. "He must have drowned," Blick said. And Doppler moaned. "Didn't you know we had been shagging you all night and morning?" Blick asked him. "Hell, if you hadn't been so occupied with that long, lean punk, you'd have got wise, maybe." Nola said, "We better get his leg fixed. If he ain't free with his information, he won't need his leg anymore," Blick said. "Let's get the hell away from here." And Doppler whimpered as they hazed him away. They apparently had a car in the bushes beside the canal some distance down the road. Its noise went away. Sale crawled out and had a good cough. Captain Cripp looked wide-eyed and hearty and without a sign of a chill as he exclaimed, "Well, well, good morning, good morning. You know, we began to think something had happened to you." Sale looked at him with eyes that appeared to be drained of everything but the will to carry on, then stumbled down the remaining 3 steps into the main cabin of sail. He let himself down on the starboard seat, pads of cotton under gauze thick in his neck and wrists. He had discovered the car windows had cut him. Iodine had run from under one of the pads and dried. He had just come from the hospital. Young Bonnie patrolman Joey Cripp looked at Sale. His grin took the looseness out of the corner of his mouth. "Tsk, tsk," he said. "Now that's terrible. You look a sight. By God, it's a wonder you're alive. I hope that didn't happen in Miami." Sale gave them a look of bile. "This is a private boat, in case you forgot." "Now, now, I hope we can keep things on an amiable footing," Captain Cripp murmured. Sale said, "Drag it." His face was more cream than any other color. He reached behind himself in the tackle locker and got a gaff hook, a 4-foot shaft of varnished oak with a tempered bright steel hook of needlepoint. He showed them the hook and his front teeth. "I've got a 6 aspirin headache and things to go with it. You 2 polite public servants get out of here before I go fishing for kidneys." Patrolman Joey Cripp stood up. "I didn't think we'd have any trouble with you, Mr. Sale. I hope we wouldn't, on account of you acted like a gentleman last night." "Sit the hell down, Joey," Captain Cripp put in. "Mr. Sale, you're under arrest, I'm sorry to say." Sale said, "Arrest?" He scowled. "Is this on the level?" "It sure is." "Pop said it," agreed young Joey. Captain Cripp shook a finger at Sale. He said, "Listen. Watermen found human blood in that fish mess on the dock last night. The harbor squad divers went down this morning. He found a bathing suit with a sinker tied to it. He also found a live box with some live barracuda in it. It was a barracuda you butchered on the dock. Your fish line you had in your hand when Joy got there was wet, but it don't take a minute to wet a line. You described a man and a woman that looked a lot different from the pair Joey saw you with. We've been doing some arithmetic, and we figure you were covering up." "Now," Sale said, "I guess I'm supposed to get scared?" "I don't know," Captain Cripp said, "but a dead Greek was found over on the island this morning, and in your bathing suit, which the diver got, was some island sand and some stickers off the pine trees like grows on the island." "I guess," Joey said, "it does look kind of funny." "I regret that it does," Captain Cripp agreed. "After all, evidence is evidence, and while Miami has a wonderful hospitality, we do draw lines, and when our visitors go so far as to use knives on..." "Let's get this straight," Sale put in. "Pine tree stickers and sand are just about alike here and in Key West, and points between." "You may be assured," Sale sprang up, gripping the hook. He began to yell, "What's the idea of this clowning? I know you 2 lug cops when I see 'em. If you got something to say, get it off your chests." Joey sighed. I guess courtesy is something you can't acquire. What you say, Pop? Hell with the Chief's courtesy campaign, huh? Now that you mention it, Joey, okay, Captain Cripp pulled manacles out of his hip pocket. We're going to fan you into the can, and we're going to work you over until we get the straight of this. Sales slammed the gaff into a corner. That's more like it. If you hadn't tried to fancy pants around last night, I'd have showed you something then. Sale shuffled into the galley and got the rearmost can of beer out of the icebox. It gurgled when he shook it, but that was because of a small sealed jar of water which fitted inside it. Stuffed around the jar were some sheets of paper. He held the documents out to the two policemen. Joey raked his eye over the print and pen signatures, then spelled them out, lips moving. "Aw, this don't make no difference," he said. "Or does it?" Captain Cripp complained. "My glasses fell off yesterday when I was having one of my infernal chills." "What does this say, Joey?" "He's a private dick, commissioned to locate some stuff that sank on a yacht called the Lady Luck. The insurance people hired him." Captain Cripp buttoned his coat, squared it over his hips, set his cap with a pat on the top. "Who signed the papers, Joey?" Joey said. "They're all right, Pop. From what it says, I guess this private op is the head of something called Marine Investigations. Reckon that's an agency, huh?" Captain Cripp sighed and ambled over to the companionway. "Beauty before age, Joey." Joey bristled. "Seamus or no Seamus, I say it don't make no difference. Let the next guy have the honor, Joey. Look, Pop, damn it. The last private op I worked over got me 2 years in the sticks," he said. Something about me chiseling in on the reward and the skipper believed him. It was a damn lie, except, well, out, Joey. "But Pop, the stinker." "Out," Captain Cripp barked. "You're as big a fool as your ma." Joey licked his lips, raking Sail with malevolent eyes. Then he turned and climbed the companion steps. Captain Cripp looked at Sail. He felt for the bottom step with one foot without looking down. As if he didn't expect it to do any good, he asked. "You wouldn't want to cooperate?"
"I wouldn't."
"Why not?"
"I've done it before."
Captain Cripp grinned slightly. "Just as you say, if you get yourself in a sling, it'd be better if you had a reason for refusing to help the police. All I get out of this is 10% for recovering the stuff. I can't see a split. I need the dough. And you with a boat like this? Maybe I like boats and maybe it keeps me broke. The only reason you're not in the can right now is that any shyster could make this circumstantial evidence look funny as hell. Forget the split."
"Thanks," Sale said. "Now I'm going to sound off. It just might be that you lads think you can let me finish it out, then step in and maybe find the location of that boat for yourselves. Then, while I was in your Bastille, trying to explain things you could think to ask me, the stuff might disappear off the boat. That's kind of plain talk. I feel kind of plain right now."
Captain Cripp's ears moved up a little with a tightening of his jaw muscles. He took his foot off the companionway step. He gave his cap an angry adjustment. Then he put the foot back again. "This malaria is sure something. I feel like a lark today. Only I keep thinking about the chills tomorrow." "Try whiskey and quinine," Sale said. "I think the whiskey part gave it to me." The two cops went away with Joey kicking his feet down hard as the dock planks. Sale took Ryan aspirin for what ailed him, changed clothes, took a taxi uptown and entered what looked like the largest hardware store. He asked where they kept their marine charts. The nervous old salesman in the chart department had a rip in his canvas apron. He mixed his talk in with wavering gestures of a pipe of which most of the stem had been chewed. "Mister, you must have some funny things happen to you. You being so tall," he said. "Right now you look as if you had an accident." Sale steadied himself by holding to the counter edge. "Who sells government charts here, Dad?"
"Well, there's one other store besides us, Hopkins Carter. But if you're going down on the Keys, we got everything you need here. If you go inside, you'll want charts 32, 60, and 61. They're the strip charts. But if you take Hawk Channel, you'll need Harbor Chart 583 and charts 1249, 50, and 51. Here, I'll show." Sale squinted his eyes. swallowed and said, I don't want to buy a chart. I want you to slip out and telephone me if either of certain two persons comes in here and asks for charts. 1250, the one which covers Lower Matacumbe. Huh? Sales said patiently. It's easy, Dad. You just tell the party you got to go get the chart and go telephone me. Then stall around 3 or 4 minutes as if you're getting the chart out of the stockroom. That'll give me time to get over here and pick up their trail. The nervous old man put his pipe in his mouth and immediately took it out again. What kind of shenanigans is this? Sales showed him a license to operate in Florida. One of them fellers, huh? The old man did not seem impressed. Sales put a $5 bill on the counter. That one's got a twin. How about it? The old man picked up the bill, squinted at it. You mean this is a counterfeit or something? What? No, no, no. Control your imagination, Dad. The five is good, and it's yours. And another one like it if you help me. You mean I keep this whether they show up or not? That's the idea. Go ahead, mister, and describe them people. Sale made a word picture of Blick and Nola. Not trusting Dad's memory, he put the salient points down on a piece of paper. He had a telephone number. That phone is a booth in a cigar store on the next corner. How far is this Hopkins Carter store? About 2 blocks, reckon. I'll be there for the next 10 minutes. Then I'll be in the cigar store. Ask for Chief Stuart Johnson when you call. That you? Uh-huh. Sale, walking off, was not as pale as he had been on the boat. He had put on a serge suit with more black than blue and a new black polo. When he was standing in front of the elevator, taking a pull at a flat amber bottle which had a crown and a figure on the label, the old man yelled, Mister! Sale lowered the bottle, started coughing. Let me look at this again and see if you said anything about the way he talked, the old man said. Sale moved back to where he could see the old fellow peering at the paper, which held the descriptions. The old man took his pipe out of his teeth. Mister, what does that feller talk like? Well, about like the rest of these crackers. No, wait. He'll call you Bud 2 or 3 times. The old man waved his pipe. I already sold that man a 1250. The hell? Around 30 minutes ago, I reckon. That's swell. Sale pumped air out of his lungs in a short laugh, which had no sound except such noise as the air made going past his teeth and out of his nostrils. There was this one chance. They would probably want a late chart for their X marks a spot, and now they've got it. So be off to the wars. He kissed the palm sneeringly. That for the whole works. He weaved round, a lot more steady than he had been a minute before. He put the flat flask between his teeth and looked at the spinning ceiling fan. By the time the bottle was empty, his head and eyes were screwing around in time with the flying blades. He got his feet tracking in the general direction of the door. The old man said, That there chart was delivered. Sale maneuvered a turn and halt. Huh? He ordered over the telephone, and we delivered. I got the address somewhere. The old man thumbed his order book, stopping to point at each name with his pipe stem. While away, he said finally, a houseboat on the Miami River below the 12th Street Causeway. Sale cocked the empty bottle in a wastebasket, put $5 in front of the old man and headed for the elevator. He was a lot steadier. The houseboat, while away, was built for rivers and not very wide ones. 60 feet of thereabouts waterline, she had 3 decks that put her up like a skyscraper. She was white or had been. A man who loved boats would have said she should never have been built. Scattered on shore near was a gravel pile, 2 trucks with nobody near them, a shed junk from the hurricane, a trailer with both tires flat and windows broken, and 2 rowboats in as bad shape as a trailer. Sale was behind most of the junk at one time or another on his way to the riverbank. The river ran between wooden bulkheads at this point. Between Sail and While Away, 2 tugs, a yawl, a cruiser, and another houseboat were tied to dolphins along the bulkhead. Nobody seemed to be on any of the boats. Sail stripped to dark blue silk underwear shorts. He hid everything else under the junk. The water had a little more smell in floating things than in the harbor. After it eased down into it, he kept behind the moored boats next to the bulkhead. The tide carried him. He was just coming under the bow of the While Away when one of the square window ports of the houseboat opened. Sail sank suddenly. He thought somebody was going to shoot or use a harpoon. Something heavy, evidently it fell out of the porthole, hit the water. It sank quickly. Touching Sale, it pushed him aside. It went on sinking. Sale got the idea that a navy anchor was at the lowermost part of the sinking object. He swam down after it. The river had only 2 fathoms here. He did not have much trouble finding it. When he clung to the object, the tide stretched his legs out behind. Whoever had tied the knots was a sailor. Sailor knots. While they hold, are made to be easily untied. Sale got them loose. He began to think he wouldn't make the top with his burden. He was out of air. His head came out of the water with his eyes open, fixed in the direction of the square port. Nobody's head was there. No weapon appeared. Sale looked around, then threw an arm up. He missed the first spring line which held the houseboat to the bulkhead. He grasped the next one. He held Nola's head out. Water leaked from Nola's nose and mouth. Some of the rope which had tied her to the heavy navy anchor was still wrapped around her. Sale used it to tie her to the spring line so that her head was out of the water. Then he had to try twice before he could get up the spring line to the houseboat deck. Nola began gagging and coughing. It made a racket. Sale stumbled through the handiest door. Waves of pain jumped from his ribs to his toes, from ribs to hair. The bandages had turned red, and it was not from mercurochrome. The houseboat furnishings must have been something 15 years ago. Most of the varnish had alligatored. Sale got into the galley by accident. Rust, dirt, smell. He grabbed the only things in sight, a quart brass fire extinguisher and a rusted ice pick. He found a dining salon beyond the galley. He was half across it when Andopoulos came in the opposite door. Andopoulos had a rusty butcher knife in one hand. He was using the other hand to handle a chair for a crutch, riding it with a knee of the leg which Blick and Nola had put a bullet through. Clustered around Andopoulos' eyes, more on the lids than anywhere else, were puffy gray blisters. They were about the size burning cigarettes would make. 2 fingernails were off of the hands, the one which held the butcher knife. Red ran from the mutilated fingertips down over the rusty knife. Sale through the fire extinguisher. He was weaker even than he had thought. The best he could do was bounce the extinguisher off the bulkhead behind Andopoulos. Andopoulos said thickly, "I fix you up this time, Fran," and reversed the knife for throwing. Sale threw his ice pick. It was a good shot. The pick stuck into Andopoulos' chest over his heart, but did not go in deep enough to trouble Andopoulos. He never bothered to jerk it out. He already had enough pain elsewhere not to know it was there. Feet banged through the boat behind Sail. They approached. Andopoulos threw. Sail dropped. His weakness seemed to help. The knife went over his head. A uniformed cop had appeared in the door. Bad luck put him in the path of the knife. He made a bleeding sound, took spraddling steps, and leaned against the bulkhead, his hands trying to cover the handle of the butcher knife and his left shoulder. He made a poor job of it. Sail got up and lurched around Andopoulos. The chair crutch made Andopoulos clumsy. Once through the door behind Andopoulos, Sale found himself in what had once been the main cabin and pretended to be still. Blick sat on the cabin floor, his face a mess. His visage was smeared with blue ink. The ink bottle was upside down under a table on which new marine charts were spread open. A common writing pen lay on the chart. Andopoulos came in after Sale, banging on the chair crutch, the ice pick still stuck in his chest by its point. He came at Sale, hopped on one leg, and swung his chair with the other. Sale, coughing, hurting all over, tried to dodge. He made it, but fell down, and Andopoulos swung the chair. Sale rolled, and the chair went to pieces on the floor. Nola was still screaming. Men were swearing outside. More men were running around on the houseboat, trying to find the way below. A police siren was whining. Andopoulos held the leg of his chair still. It was heavy enough to knock the brains out of an ox. He hopped for Sale. Sale, looking about wildly, saw the fire extinguisher on the floor. It must have bounced in here. Maybe somebody had kicked it in accidentally. He rolled to it. Andopoulos lifted the chair leg. The extinguisher made sickly noise as Sale pumped it. No tetrachloride came out. Nothing happened to indicate it ever would. Then a first squirt ran out about a foot. The second was longer. The third wet Andopoulos' chest. Sale aimed and pumped. The tetrachloride got into Andopoulos' eyes. Andopoulos made snarling sounds and couldn't see any more. Sale got up and weaved to the table. The chart on the table had 2 inked lines forming a V with arms that ran to landmarks on Lower Matacumbe Island in the Florida Keys. Compass bearing were printed beside each arm, and the point where the lines came together was ringed. Several times Sale's lips moved, repeating the bearings, the landmarks. Then Sale picked up the pen. He made a northeast into a north-northeast and a south-southeast out of an E. His letters looked enough like the others that nobody would guess the difference, and the lines of the V's were wavy. They had not been laid out with a protractor from the compass roses. Therefore, they did not indicate an exact spot. Probably they varied as much as mile, for the Lady Luck seemed to lie well off Matacumbe. Nobody would locate any sunken boat from that chart now. Sale was repeating the true bearings to fix them in his memory when Andopoulos came hopping in. Andopoulos was still blind. He still had his chair leg. Blick on the floor called, "Nola, kid, what's wrong?" He didn't seem to know where he was or what was happening. Andopoulos weaved for Blick's mumbling voice. "Blick," Sale yelled thickly, "jump!" Blick said foolishly, "Was that you, Nola?" Sale was stumbling towards him, fully aware he would not make it in time. He didn't. He woke up nights for quite a while hearing the sound Andopoulos' chair leg and Blick's head made. Andopoulos hopped around, still quite blind, and made for Sale. He had his chair leg raised, hair, blood, and brains stuck to the hickory chair leg. Sale got out of the way. Andopoulos stopped, stood perfectly still, and listened. Sale did not move. He was pale, swaying. He squatted, got his hands on the floor, sure he was going to fall if he didn't. He tried not to breathe loudly enough for Andopoulos to hear. Captain Cripp, Patrolman Joey Cripp, and the old man from the hardware store came in together looking around. The old man pointed at Sale and began, "There's the man who asked about the fellow that got the chart. I told you I told him the chart was delivered here, and he probably had come right." Andopoulos rushed a voice, holding his chair leg up. "Look out," Sale croaked. Andopoulos instantly veered for where he thought Sale's voice had come from. He was a little wrong. It was hard for him to maintain a direction, hopping on one leg. He hopped against a wall, hard. Andopoulos sighed, leaned over backward, and hit the floor. He had a fit, a brief fit, ending by Andopoulos straightening out and relaxing. Hitting the wall had driven the ice pick the rest of the way into his chest. Sale remained on all fours on the floor. He felt, except for the pain, as if he were very drunk on bad liquor. He must have remained on his hands and knees a long time, for he was vaguely aware that Captain Cripp and Joey had walked around and around him, but without speaking. Then they went over the table and found the chart. They divided their looking between the chart and each other. "It's it," Joey said. "Yeah," Captain Cripp sounded thoughtful. "What about it, Joey?" "You're the boss, Pop." Captain Cripp turned the corners of his mouth down. He folded the chart, stuck it inside his clothing under his belt, and he straightened his uniform. A doctor came in at last. He seemed to be a very silent doctor. He picked up Andopoulos' wrist, held it a while, then put it back on the floor carefully. The wrist and arm were more flexible than that much rubber would have been. The doctor did not speak. Sale was still on all fours. The doctor upset him gently. Sale had his tongue between his teeth. The doctor explored with his hands. When he came to Sale's chest, a small amount of sound escaped between Sale's tongue and teeth. "My God," the doctor said. Four men helped with the stretcher as far as the ambulance, but only two when it came to getting the stretcher into the ambulance. Two could manage it better, using a system which they had. The ambulance motor started. Captain Cripp got into the ambulance with Sale. He was holding his right hand to his nose. "About Joey," he said. "I've been wondering if Joey believed in something on the side, when he could get it. You know, kind of the modern idea." He took his hand from his nose and quickly put a handkerchief in its place. The handkerchief got red at once. Then he put the folded marine chart under Sale's head. "Joey," he chuckled, "is as old-fashioned as angels, only he about busted my beak before I could explain."